Everyone, listen to me. We've all been deceived. We need to calmly head towards the exits.
Run for your life! It's gonna fall!
Welcome to the Banana
Bread and Circus
Republic with Crispy and
Tono,
your hosts for the end of the world, or whatever we're looking at.
We're looking at the reset.
Yeah, it's we're gonna be fine, ladies and gentlemen.
So strap in and join us to recalibrate the soul as we explore the ether and ethics of our evolution.
In the space between spaces, there's an intelligence that guides our values and our judgments, which determines who we are, what we're doing, and where we're going.
Follow your nose.
And think for yourself.
Soft and Squishy, here we go. Welcome, friend.
Is that the name of the episode, Soft and Squishy?
Soft and Squishy.
Welcome, nerds, he says.
My nerds.
Yeah, no, I was thinking something. I'll write it down. But, how you been, sir?
I've been good. Thanks for asking. I've been actually... Yeah, really good. Just riding the waves, you know, riding this crazy ride. Just riding the ride. Yeah, and we're in back in the indoor upstairs studio here. So it's kind of interesting. It's like it's our own little echo chamber, you know?
Where we started.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Besides, actually, we did turn the mics on for the very first time. It was actually in your kitchen. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah. In my kitchen and then in the front yard, but not the best acoustics in either of those places compared to here.
Well, and also just once the equipment got less conducive to like a travel-oriented flexibility, then... Yeah. It's always, dude, I appreciate that you're able, like, you, this is in your routine, man. For real.
What's that?
Like, stopping by here.
Oh, stop it. Well, cheers, I guess.
Yeah, but dude. No joke. Like, I know what it's like.
It's become, you know, I look forward to this and, you know, it's just as much for us as it is for everybody else. So. You know, I think we're doing a good thing here. We just don't know what the outcome is, you know? Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want the accolades, even though the accolades actually taste pretty good sometimes. There's good and bad ways that people kind of praise whatever thing you're doing. Because to them, it's the best thing ever sometimes. But then other times it's, you know, it's different, you know? It's interesting that like spending less time with family, because there's such a, for those who have such a, like, an emotional charge to, that relationship, that attraction, they, you know, feel good. Or relieved, rather, when they're able to see them again. Like, there's a certain constant that is, yeah, it's a powerful thing. So,
we're chemically complex creatures. I didn't mean to alliterate there, but, yeah. No, there's the way that we respond, you know, internally, you know, things that we can't control, just how you feel when you see something, you know, it's makes you wonder how many other animals do that, how many other are capable of it.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And the accolade part of it is the reinforcement that you get, the dump of whatever chemical that is. So like, it's different. Just to be clear there, like it sometimes can be like a cortisol dump. And for whatever reason, that's euphoric, but like in an unconscious way. So that's where like kind of that unconscious sort of codependent nature comes to play, where you're addicted to it, but you don't know why you're addicted to it, you know, or at least you won't, it'll be hard for you to admit that you're even addicted to it.
The rat doesn't really understand why it hits the button all the time, even though it only gets roared at so many.
Yeah. Because it's all like impulses. And how do you respond to each impulse that leads to another impulse? And that pretty soon that energy can compound and it can create these, for sure, magnificent bursts. But it's a burst. Like, where does that burst blow up towards or implode? You know,
where does it come back down to? You know?
Yeah. Because, like, the empathy factor, right? Like, that sense of feeling connected to your environment, the people in your environment, your social awareness, your world, rather than just worrying about this all the time, you know, there's a shift that happens where you feel, in a way, compelled to manifest the good like as often as you possibly can, because there's only so much time left.
Yeah, there is something to that. There's a switch that flips in people, you know, at a certain age, and it's not the same age for everybody, but you know, people stop living for themselves so much and, you know, try and go outwards, you know, with their best intentions.
Yeah, or just reacting all the time.
Yeah.
Where there's no like pause and wait, why did I react the way I reacted? And then like accept that the answer is what it is, because it's like it's not always personal. I think that's been my big issue, is like this strange like way that I take things personally with my loved ones. Like, That's the thing. Like, I take it personally.
You can't help it because they're loved ones. You know, they
exactly.
You having a good joking relationship with loved ones is almost like having a business relationship with a friend. You know, it's dualistic. It's sometimes parallel and sometimes crisscrossing. And if the timings of those aren't, you know, well timed and thought out, then yeah, shit can be misconstrued or taken poorly or said poorly, whatever. It's just the faultiness of human interaction. We're the aquatic ape, but we're also the lying monkey, you know.
Yeah. So, there's a whole diverse portfolio of beings in our past. Yeah, it's pretty real, man. And the gateway to that is, I think, through pets.
You know? They help so much. But some fucking people are weird, and
I was waiting. I figured this was coming.
You know, like, they're like, I don't like animals, or I don't like pets, or blah, blah, blah. And it makes you wonder how they are when they're alone, those people, you know?
I do. And yeah.
If they're decent people, then I'm like, total enigma. But, you know, if they're like, oh, I don't like pets because, you know, I kill them every time they don't stop barking or something like that. It's like, okay, yeah, then you shouldn't have pets. But if they're like, oh, I just don't like animals, it's like, I'll get people.
Yeah. And
the more I try.
I don't know how that, where that cutoff really comes from, but it's a sad thing. Yeah. Like, I remember growing up with movies like Shiloh. Did you ever watch that movie?
I think I was just barely, you know, out of that age range to, for the appeal.
I would imagine at that time. Yeah. That was like part of my like step down, but it like in generationally speaking,
that was like around 2000 that came out.
Probably. Yeah. Or late 90s, maybe.
Yeah.
Mid to late 90s, perhaps. But it was like this really, for those of you who don't know, it was about this like really, kind of heartwarming story about a boy and a dog, and the adults in the picture were clueless and tone deaf to what that relationship represented. And, you know, they wanted to, like, they had their own views about that relationship. I mean, because we all know it exists.
Mm.
It's there.
Oh, so absolutely.
It was their response to this child's relationship. And that was the core of, you can only imagine what happened after that. I mean, very different viewpoints, but, you know,
well, I've
conservative
seen
enough.
I've seen Old Yeller, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Old Yeller. I mean,
if it was less than that, then I'm like, okay.
Yeah. But. No, Old Yeller traumatized the fuck out of me. That's one of those movies, ladies and gentlemen, that, yeah, take with, you know, a nice hefty dose of your favorite something.
Oh my God. It's not that I like the movie. I'm certainly not being like, oh yeah, no, I sat through it fine or anything like that. But my dad being who he was, you know, he was a hyper realist and also a very avid hunter. And I remember him explaining it to me when I was old enough to ask, like, what's wrong with Old Yeller? And he's like, it's got the rabies, it's sick, it's gonna die and bite people.
Yeah.
You gotta shoot it. I'm like, right. Oh, Jesus. Like, 4 or 5 years old. 5 years old. And he's like, it's got the rabies, you gotta shoot it.
And in a way, it's like, it's one of those things that it's such a tremendously potent fact of life that kind of has its like, yeah, deep roots. Like that's definitely not the first story that's been told about that sort of thing going on. Like that's a pretty intense, endeavor.
We're kind of that species that can, you know, initiate cohabitation with other animals. You know, we're good animal tenders if we want to be.
Exactly. Because, like, yeah. One way I related to is, like, dogs are up there in terms of their intelligence. Like, they're up there with dolphins.
Oh, fuck, you know, yeah.
And we have a high, high regard for dolphins. And yeah. So just think about that, like that, you know, they're basically like, as far as forebrain, like real estate, you might say, it's like certain dogs are definitely in that league, I think.
You know, I hate to be a sizist here. I'm not a size queen, but.
No, and I don't mean it like in real estate in those terms.
But typically the bigger the dog, the more intelligence it is going to have. I'm not saying small dogs are always stupid and big dogs are always smart. Like the middle ones tend to be the smartest, like the mix of it, like border collies and shit. Like
they're crazy smart.
Yeah. Like and they need to be working.
Yeah. They're firing on all cylinders to make that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, those dogs are amazing. I had a relationship with a border collie and awesome. Like, such a cool dog. I kind of, yeah, I want to have a dog that's like a border collie.
Oh, You gotta, they either gotta be with you all the time or you gotta keep them busy.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. But my attention span is so short that pretty soon, you know, if, you know, the stars answer my prayers, kind of thing, then it'll account for that. I can definitely pay attention to a border collie.
If you soon. Got some goats and more chickens and some geese and shit back here and, you know, yeah, gave your border collie something to do, like, no, you guys go over here now. No, you go over here. Like, just shifting shit around. And
well, there's like, an idea for Benji, if you're listening. make a note of it.
Border collies.
Do it. Dude, they have such a crazy setup over there. That's why I say, like, yeah, border collie.
Do they have horses?
They do not, but they have a bunch of different, like, fowl livestock.
I've watched border collies fuck with horses before.
Really?
Yeah. And it's...
That's interesting, because they want to herd them, but the horse is just not having it?
Well, I have no idea... I know for a fact that this particular border collie did herd these couple horses regularly, you know, to different parts of the pasture. But I have no idea why it was doing what it was doing, other than for sheer fun and enjoyment and
boredom. No kidding.
But it was spinning around. It had a hold of the horse's tail, and the horse is just bucking around, and, you know, back legs are coming up every, you know, other stance, bucking around in a 360, and this border collie, I'm sorry, I did say that I saw it, I didn't, it was my buddy's border collie, he was telling me about it, it was his dad's, and didn't do it regularly, but he'd seen it multiple times, and I believe him. But it's holding on to the horse's tail, and the horse is trying to kick it off as it's bucking around like a bucking bronco, and just as it would almost hit it, like slow down to the right pace to be able to line it up, the dog would just let go. The horse would keep flipping out for a minute. And then the dog would circle it again and do it again. It would do it, you know, multiple times in a row.
Like it's playing.
Yeah. It was it's a game playing, for but it, but it's such a deadly game.
Yeah. Well, they're living on the edge there. Yeah. They're like they're firing on so many cylinders. Like, yeah, come and catch me. I dare you.
They interpret time the same way flies do, you know, like they just see things so quickly. They're just,
dude, that must be a wild way to be, like, just that and then like to keep going would like replenish whatever reservoir of energy you have to do that. So it's like a self-referencing loop.
They're a much more efficient creature, I think, than we are.
Neurologically speaking?
Biologically, in the sense of, well, yeah, neurologically and biologically.
Well, I think it has its benefits. I know some people that have the attention span of a border collie.
Not a lot.
And it's like,
though.
No, but a lot of it, if you can make it play to your strengths, then that's a good thing. And be aware of the weaknesses, right? That transcendental, like, object, as McKenna and the Greeks and all of our history have interpreted the ability to perceive the other, but because it's so difficult, because it's literally like in some circles, it's regarded as it's in the shadows. Like it's literally your blind spots. Be aware of your blind spots and integrate that into what you're good at.
Or bottoms up now, Socrates.
Socrates. How's Socrates doing? Oh, fuck. Think he's doing okay?
He's probably fine. He's probably been recycled a few times since then.
Hmm. Yeah, well. That's, I have no comment.
Weird to
that's
think.
Where it ends.
It's weird to think what's on the other side.
Well, it is a fast. I mean, speaking of Greek philosophy and Plato and Aristotle and
Socrates,
the absolute truth, right? The absolute, like, Platonic realm, as far as like objectivity and mathematics were concerned. All right. They believed in a very, like, it almost reminds me of how, like, the Viking culture would regard Valhalla. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as that transcendent experience, And
that's right.
Whatever
you
that
said
means.
It, you said it like a Norwegian. Transcendent.
Sorry. I was going to go the extra syllable, but I stopped midway and I was like, wait a minute. I had to count my syllables for a minute.
No, you nailed it.
Transcendent. Oh, fuck. Somebody bail me out. Who's going to bail me out?
No. I'm listening, though.
Look, Kashmir Rajneesh, why don't you just chill?
No, but still.
Link and I are cruising the mountain, bro, and we figure we's a little juice.
No, we's in the juice. We's the juice. No, we's in the juice. No, we's in the juice.
Shout out to Pauly Shore.
Chill,
Mr. Pauly Shore, ladies and gentlemen.
Let him play Richard Simmons. Starting a movement.
Sweet. How's that going?
Oh, it's funny. Pauly Shore, I forget what production company he did it for. He played Richard Simmons in like a 15-minute movie. Do you remember who Richard Simmons was?
Sounds familiar, I can't put a face.
He was like a celebrity, like exercise trainer back in the 80s and 90s. Like, this super flamboyant gay dude with a brown, fro and bad spray on tan, always in these short shorts. He just come out and be like, "Hey!" So Pauly Shore is playing him in like this 15-minute movie, and I guess they made that movie to hopefully get full length version of it, produced. But I don't think Richard Simmons is too happy about it.
No.
Didn't want to be portrayed by Pauly Shore at the very least, maybe. But yeah.
Pauly, any portrayal.
Shout out to Pauly Shore. He did a good job.
Shout out to Pauly Shore. Kind of a sidestep. In terms of, just movies growing up, like, shit, I had this, God damn it, totally escaped me. Fuck.
You want to play the movie? You want to play the, early Lifetime movie guessing game? See how clairvoyant we are?
Lifetime movie guessing game?
Early Lifetime movie guessing game.
Well.
I'll let you try and figure out what you were thinking about.
No, but it probably doesn't matter. I'm sure it'll come up later. But yeah, dude, Pauly Shore. I enjoyed his comedy for a period of time there. And I meant to mention, I think any guest that comes on, I think we should ask them who their favorite comedian or comedy figure.
Let's write a list of things.
Actor, non-actor, whatever.
Philosopher, comedian, actor, musician.
You want to go that?
Warlord. Warlord, philosopher, musician, comedian, actor.
Warlord?
Well,
like the
some people have favorite warlords.
Are you talking about where your dog was named after?
I mean,
that's an interesting story.
Yeah, there's a lot to that.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a reason why I named. I mean, there's a couple reasons why I named him that. But yeah,
Yeah. No, that goes deep. I mean, that was one of those colonization movements that were that surge of energy that we were talking about, right?
And not only that, he was incredibly libertarian as a leader. Once you accepted him as your leader, that was the caveat. You know, if you didn't, then yeah, you're fucking Genghis Khan. You know, we're talking about Genghis Khan. If you know, basically one of his tenets was give me a tenth or I'll take a hundredth, or give me 10% or I'll take 100%, you know? Mm-hmm. And like the people that gave 10%, like they were, whether you want to call it like a protection scheme or just alliance, whatever, but yeah, like they were given freedom to practice whatever religion they wanted, whatever languages they wanted, whatever, you know, marriage rights they wanted.
Hmm.
It was actually a somewhat forward-thinking society. So, for the region at the time.
It is an interesting and curious thing, because it has its, I think it has some of that, like that grit and that edge as far as how the Viking cultures would run things too. Like it was like this beautiful democracy that basically started on the premise of some of those things. Like, it's kind of interesting to me how the pendulum will just swing back and forth, and you have like these surges and then these declines and then these surges, and in terms of the political energy, the landscape, the mental understanding of like
the socioeconomics of it.
Yeah. A lot of that is derived from picking a side. So like once you have momentum in one side versus the other, that is going to feed the other and vice versa. So then you get this swing. Does that make sense if I say it that way? I'm trying to describe. Yeah. Well, it is a pendulum swing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But it's like in terms of the socioeconomic landscape.
Right. Yes. Also, you know, the integration of things like that, like socioeconomics, like, oh, Jesus, that sounded so stupid.
You're good, dude. No, you're good.
I don't know. Fucking.
It's okay. It's been on my mind a little bit more lately in terms of the connection between. Yeah, so I kind of took us in the back door and like pulled you into the kitchen and was like, does this taste good? Oh, yeah. No, it needs a little more heat. A little more like fat to mellow things out and cut the acid and the heat. Or was I?
A little more salt, a little less salt.
Warlords.
Get the salt extractor. Oh yeah.
Warlords and history. And as far as like that, those socioeconomic trends, as far as those go,
yes.
Like when you have a push and a pull and all these interdynamics of what the public is willing to accept, like the 10% or I'll take 100. Sorry. It almost reminds me of like, and nothing against Genghis Khan at all.
No.
Because I really appreciate the history and everything that led after that. And not only that, the origin of it, the fact that no, we're taking, it's like the Boston Tea Party, you know,
tax for 2%. Fuck yeah, you.
Tax revolts. Yeah. You know, they happen, right? Oh, that's the swing. That's the pendulum swing. You know, that's the, in some circles, that's the Sith rising up against the Jedi. And it's like, but the Jedi are the Jedi, the Master Jedi.
No, it's just balance. It's two sides of the same coin.
Right.
I was explaining this to a fellow friend of ours the other day who's going in search of a religious path, and know, he was asking me what the difference between Taoist and Buddhist was. And in my best, like, 3-minute surmising of it that I could give him at work. Yeah, like, how the Taoist principles of balance, you know, of understand you can't control every situation as much as you want, you know, like right. you've got to let go, you've got to walk the path of balance, you know. And you know, I could see him trying to take in what I was saying, but it's hard to explain Buddhism in the sense that there's a few different, there's a decent amount of different denominations of it.
Yeah, do you mind if I actually
compare the
comment
two?
On that? Oh,
please do. Please do. Yeah, no, you're the perfect person. That's why I brought it up.
No, not me, but well, I appreciate, to me. I do appreciate the, you bringing it up just in general, actually, because I think it's important to recognize that, first of all, it's there. One is derived from Hindu and the other is kind of a, like, it exists in all things. So it's like kind of not really derived from anything. It's kind of like, it's literally like almost like where the floor drops out and then it's like, oh. The boundaries are like, oh, you don't actually know where the boundaries are anymore. And the reason I put it that way is because in like taking the word Buddha in Hindu, Buddha is the person who's awake. That's all it means.
The enlightened one, the person who's awake.
Yeah. And so it's been so commoditized. Commoditized?
Commoditized.
Commoditized.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, yeah. Sorry.
No, that is a terrible word. We should trade that with some other language.
The fact that it has been commoditized is like it's trying to appeal to that degree, but it's also one of the aspects of the way. So it's almost like a gateway to the way. And as far as by that, I mean Tao.
Yeah.
So it's like
the Tao Te Ching, you know.
Like yeah.
Taoist principles.
The book of the way.
Yeah.
It was just like a way of
Tao
like,
means way in Chinese and
it's
Mandarin? Question mark?
Mandarin. I don't know. I don't know specifically
one of the dialects, but Tao means way in, you know, that era.
Supposedly it's the like I mean it's over 2,500 years old. So it actually predates Bible scripture based on if we're gonna accept the fact that that alone is 2,000.
Well it's definitely not as simple as that, I don't think.
No, God, you know, no. And that's not what this podcast is necessarily about either.
Oh, no.
I'm just saying.
I love theological discussions.
Relative to what, like, is basically public, like, it's one of those things, like, for me, it's like that opposite trend where, like, you know, in a way, you're so close to that cliff where it just shoots right up to infinity. Or the opposite, right?
It principles that have probably been repeated through times through reiterations of our species as we've, you know, almost come and gone.
Yeah. And all from its own, like, vantage point, its own viewpoint of where it's at today. Like, for example, some of our listeners may listen to an episode that we've done from like several, you know,
years ago,
several years ago or, you know, months ago or whatever. And it may still have relevance in their life. Even, you know, I'm not going to go so far as to say like decades into the future by any means, but ideally, like, these subjects around, like, the origins of empathy and, like, where we can, like, trace that breadcrumb of, like, what makes sense to us on a, not just on an intellectual level, but on that emotional level as well.
Well, like you were saying, you know, the dogs being akin to animals as smart as dolphins, who we consider ourselves, you know, to be just barely smarter than sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, we're, seems like the smarter the species is capable of being, the more that they're able to experience things like empathy or love, jealousy, like oxytocin, you know, being the regulator basically of both love or affection and jealousy. You know, it's the same chemical that's making both emotions happen.
The and sum of its parts, right?
Yeah.
Like, even if it's just part of some of those parts, like just little chunks, or, you know, just varying relationship, like clusters of it, of this thing that's feeding on other portions of it. It's such a storm. And it's like the through line is that consciousness element of the ride. How conscious are we of the last dip, of the last high, like of the last major, major low, right? And we often remember the lows longer than the highs, for sure. But
oh, the highs are high, but all the lows are.
It's funny because I'm more afraid of heights than I am of going down something.
Well, how fast are you going down it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
That's
you know what they say on Wall Street. You know, the bull climbs the stairs, but the bear jumps out the window. Have you heard that before?
Who the fuck's putting a bear in a high rise?
It's, yeah, the bear bull relationship of, like,
okay.
Yeah. Cold and hot, like, and also, like, yeah, like.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. Bull markets versus bear markets. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah. The bear jumps out the window.
The bear jumps out the, yeah, because there's
runs
no.
Runs up the stairs.
Because once people realize that, like, oh, fuck, I'm scammed. Get me the fuck out of here. Like, that's the quickest reaction.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the quick reaction. Whereas
jumping out the window.
Whereas the bull is, like, feeding on this, like, dopamine dump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's just a trail of dopamine.
If it runs through a doorway and that doorway only goes up, it's going up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And gravity, you know, battling gravity, that's hard. In fact, that's what they say. Like, there were more millionaires during the Great Depression than any other time at once in history, because there was so much opportunity that came from it. Where, like, if you had liquidity to you have buying power, have optionality, then you could imagine, like, some of the best companies that could go, like, it could survive the crisis. Imagine that, like,
but the way
back then, even, you know, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, the way that all of those millionaires were different was some of them kept on growing on the up and up, and some of them lost their millions, you know, in the sense that a lot of the billionaires that we see today are probably descendants of that boom, whereas there's a lot of people that might have been descendants of that boom had their parents been a little wiser, or grandparents, you know, whatever the generation may be at this point.
And what that was like. Like, to see, not just to read it in a history book, but to actually see it in
the dispersal of the disparity.
Yeah. Of that individual telling the story, right? Mm-hmm. See it in the eyes of that individual and really feel that. Like, that is a intense thing to go through. We have no, like, I'll ask even, like, what my grandparents and folks understand about those time periods. And no, since the things, the policies that were put in place during that time to get us out of the crisis had, like, it's almost like, Albert Einstein's E equals MC squared was born in that space, because they figured out a way to trick the people into buying into the charade for longer. Just through
that's like continuing
getting
to
something
happen.
Something for nothing, right? That's something for nothing
continuing to happen. But yeah, I mean,
it's continuing.
That's literally the devil's trick.
It's going literally viral so bad right now that, like, it could happen on a fucking dime. Hello, who's there?
Oh God, it's me. No, but no, it's happening on a monumental scale. Like,
it's scary as shit.
The Kool-Aid suckers.
I don't even know what to fucking make of it, really. It's going to be a rude awakening for mostly the people who thought they were okay. Like, nothing could touch them. So I don't know. I don't have any answers, really. Like, I have no idea what to make of that.
I know a smartwatch isn't going to help you in the future. I can almost guarantee you that.
Yeah, I agree. Oh my God, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Because, yeah, dude, like, our dependency on the phone thing.
Connectivity
is
to
so
fucking
staggering.
Yeah. It's our tricked dependency. There's certain things that are advantages to it. You know, we have pretty much many supercomputers in our pockets, and it's how we use them is the disgusting part.
Right.
Like, how much time a day does the average person spend looking at their phone, watching senseless fucking garbage? Probably too much. And I'm not casting judgment. I find myself watching stupid shit, but I try and remark on it that, like, if it's really stupid, I don't even finish it. I'll just be like, God damn it. Fucking stuff. Why did I do that? I'm not getting that time back. But there's so much good stuff out there too. There's so much good resources out there for people. That's just a few touches away. They just focus on, it's like food. It's like food for your brain. The internet is like the grocery store for your brain.
Right.
If you go into the center of that store, you're going to come out with a lot of stuff that you don't fucking need, and it's just going to poison you and
shop
kill you.
The perimeter, people.
Yeah. Like
shop that perimeter.
Go around the perimeter. See what interests you. Every once in a while you step 10 feet into one of those nasty aisles and you grab a bag of cookies that you just can't take a dump tomorrow morning without. But aside from that, yeah, like, watch what you're putting into your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It can either be healing, nutritious, and wholly, what's the fucking word I'm looking for?
Decadent?
No, something to do with soothing, but, or it can be something that's going to poison you either short or long term.
Well, it tickles. There's so much thing, like we have so many receptors that we're deprived of because this is now our drug. Like it's a drug. It's stimulating certain receptors our brain that we don't even really, we're not aware that
people get,
it actually comes from our ability to click on things and like follow
and it's been designed that way too.
Conceptual rabbit holes is what, like, that's the trick, right? So it's like stepping back and does geese need to be fed? Like, does he need water? Like stepping back, like our pets with geese.
And someday, you know, you'll be able to feed your pets with a click of your mouse button. You know, even though mice won't be a thing because you'll have fed them to your digital pets.
Digital brain, where you think that shit all day long. Yeah. Well, and that's this type of thing. Like, we're going to have to make a choice to buy into that at some point. But I don't necessarily want to present that part of it here now. Follow up on what you were saying, too, because it makes sense. Like, this is all like what we're consuming is what we're going to digest, and then it's going to become that's food, like you're saying. So it's important that we get kind of back on that. I don't know, that sense of dieting, that
there's thought poison out there,
and there's a lot of gluttony.
Yeah,
like gluttony is part of it too, right? And I'm not saying that from like a Catholic point of view. I'm saying that based on the fact that, like, sometimes too much is just too much.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Because you burn out those receptors.
Or you throw off the balance, so to speak, in the sense of you stop being healthily skeptic and you find yourself becoming unawarely biased. Mm. You know? And when all you wanted to do was stay in that center of healthily skeptic of any idea, but still with the ability to exercise any idea, you know, that's the healthy part.
Yeah, the ability to step back from what you think you know and perceive the other with a clear lens.
Yeah, like exercise and explore thoughts. Like that is critical thinking. That's freedom of thought. And do that with the ones that you agree with as well as the ones you don't agree with. You know,
I think that's a great message to end on, sir. Cheers to that.
Well,
no joke. Like that's because that is like that's part of the
ride. I feel like I channeled JBP right there.
Or I was thinking of Hunter S.
No, that was more.
He's like the godfather, in my opinion, of that, like, sense of...
He was... Yeah, sorry. Finish
that thought. No, you're good. What were you going to say?
No, what were you going to... He was the godfather of what? God damn it.
I think that just that sense of, like, understanding to take what you know and, like, apply it to the moment, but, like, that may change because gonzo journalism at heart was that. It was, like, how things are like presented in this like sort of like theatrical way that you are participating in. You're part of that fold.
Yeah, you envelop yourself in the story.
Yeah.
Like that was the basics of gonzo journalism, but the basics of gonzo itself, gonzo was a concept before he applied it to his journalism.
Okay.
It was a concept of freak power, you know, which we can clearly see has gotten out of hand at this point.
Well, those things, they tend to, those big ideas that hit home, yeah, dude, they can be embellished.
Yeah, and any idealization or ideology at this point has been weaponized through algorithms and through thought silos and echo chambers, you know. So it's
numbing our empathy.
The idea of freak power from where Gonzo came from, the idea of that has been co-opted just like any other movement towards liberty or freedom of thought. You know, basically what happens with a movement, like what happened with the peace movement, it got co-opted by MKUltra through the spread of LSD and speed through the hippie movement, and it got co-opted from the peace movement to the you know, free love movement. The hippie ideology. Hippie ideology started off, you know, with its heart in the right place, and it got co-opted. Unfortunately, the Grateful Dead they didn't know it at the time, but they were the CIA's house band for MKUltra. You know, they were useful idiots. And and I think, to a certain degree, so was Hunter S. Thompson. He wanted to do the right thing. His heart was in the right place.
Gotcha. But, so that's okay.
But
I'll take that.
He did not know that he was controlled opposition at the time, and neither did the Grateful Dead. You know, that's good closing.
I think so. Yeah. Dude, always great seeing you, man.
Love you, sir.
Seriously.
Yeah, no.
It's fucking awesome. I love doing this with you.
Been a while.
It sure has. Yeah, to us, it's been a while. Just trying to get caught up on the publishing front, and, you know, we have a decent back catalog of things to throw up there. So it's a lot of work.
And we got invariably, we have another St. Patty's Day special coming up for you. So.
Dude, that's right. I got to convince the wife, because she's definitely on like the thought train of like, you know, it's her birthday month.
Oh,
and we're going to do the birthday month thing.
It's gone to months now.
It's gone Jesus to months. Christ. Yeah, dude. Well, thank you.
Don't tell my wife that. I appreciate your sympathy. I don't think she knows it yet. She's still on the week thing.
Yeah. And part of me is like, you know what? I can appreciate that. Fuck yeah. Let's do it. But what do you think? Like, do you think we could probably pull off a front porch recording if I can convince her?
It's weather dependent.
It's very, well, last time, dude, it was raining.
It was gorgeous, though. It was like 60 degrees.
It was decently warm.
We were out there in t-shirts. It was just sprinkling a little.
Was it t-shirts?
Really? Yeah, dude.
No shit.
It was super warm. Yeah. That's why we did it outside.
We don't do video, so I can't
reference it. It was so nice that we couldn't be inside, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, totally. And I'm fucking super down. In fact, I was in this space quarantining because I had like gotten sick, and it was back during a time when that was like something to, you know, be avoided, like the plague and shit. So I ended up quarantining up here. I remember that.
To our mask listeners out there, you probably can't hear us because you might have some over your ears too. So have a good evening.
Peace.